Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the MAPRO Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and, of course, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and many other great titles. Today is Tuesday, May 8th, and I would like to personally thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by MANAPRO. MANAPRO is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that MANAPRO cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. MANAPRO. Nurturing life. Today's secret password is Today's early bird secret password is compost. Today's early bird secret password is compost.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try MANAPRO's oyster shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try MANAPRO's oyster shell for your pullets and layers.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, the only nationally broadcast radio show all about keeping backyard poultry and living a self-sustaining lifestyle. And this is our fourth year of broadcasting, thanks to all of our sponsors and all of our listeners that make it worthwhile for our sponsors to sponsor the show. So thank you so much for tuning in. It is now time, without further ado, to introduce my lovely co-host. It is the one and the only author of many great titles, Compost Queen herself, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, how you doing today?
Hey, Whisper. Yeah, here we are on Terrific Tuesday already.
Yes.
Can you believe how the week's going by?
I can't believe it. Terrific Tuesday, absolutely. It's been a great week for me so far. Knock on wood, we'll keep it going. And yep. And yesterday was very productive for me, and I'm hoping today will be the same. And we got some rain. Thank the good Lord we got rain yesterday. The day before, Sunday, just popped all around us, but nothing here. And I was really hoping not to have to irrigate this week. And sure enough, yesterday afternoon, it started missing us here and there. And I thought, oh, great, this is going to be. And then all of a sudden, we got some really beautiful rain here at the homestead for the garden. And I was thrilled. I just wanted to go out and run around and dance in it, and basically what I really wanted to do, because we really needed it. So, I mean, if we can get a good, inch of rain once a week, or even just a little bit a couple of times a week, I'm happy, because I wouldn't have to irrigate. My dad was talking to a gentleman who lived just south of Macon, Georgia. He had fields full of corn. He said it got up to about 12, 18 inches tall, and then just he's losing it because of the lack of rain. He does not have irrigation. A lot of the big farmers down here have irrigation, especially if they're going to grow corn. They've got to have irrigation. It's almost a given, but it's expensive. So this particular farmer didn't have irrigation. And Dad jokingly, I don't know, they may have been at the men's day out, or he went to an event or something up in North Georgia, and he met this gentleman. And my dad's funny comment was, I think what he said was, you just need maybe next year to not worry about growing corn and actually grow grapes and make wine.
Yeah.
Grow grapes and make wine. I think that'll – and then that way, if you have a bad crop, then you can always just go and drink last year's crop and don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah. Well, in the whole environmental scheme thing, Whisper, you wonder why use water for corn? I mean, that's one of those low value crops in a way. Whereas wine is a high value crop. The grapes are worth quite a bit more.
Absolutely.
Water to be granted.
I did.
So where does most of your irrigation come from down there? Is it from an aquifer?
Yeah, aquifer and the wells, and they did just dig a well, and it comes out from the ground, absolutely. In fact, Sunday, we were actually expecting some rain, and we were actually going to go ahead and look at some campers, but because some storms were coming in, the weather radio was going off and things like that, we decided to turn around and go home. I don't want to be caught in a hailstorm looking at a camper. So on the way back, we noticed just about every farm we passed was irrigating. And like I said, it was, and Jen was like, I wonder if they know something we don't, because it's about to rain. but we didn't get any here. So, they don't know exactly when and where that cloud's going to come across their crop. But we finally did get some rain, thank goodness, enough to where I feel comfortable not having to water for another 7 days. So I just keep an eye out on it. And we sure as heck needed it, that's for sure. I was going to say something else about and I can't remember what it was. We got off on this. I know. I saw maybe in the last 2 weeks where we have actually sold this year more corn out of the country than we ever have before, apparently. And the majority buyer, the big buyer of that was China. It was a big article. I don't know if I posted it on the Facebook fan page or not, but I read it. It was very interesting. It said something like a record crop or record sales of corn this year, 2012, and the majority buyer was, of course, China. So I did read that mentioning corn. That popped into my brain about that article. I'm probably, people out there can probably Google it, you know, and China buys, you know, bulk corn from USA 2012, and it'll probably come up. Probably lots of people carried that, so not really related, but just since we were talking about corn, it popped into the brain. We've got a great show lined up for you today, something that we should all really definitely be interested in if we have a little homestead or a backyard. We have backyard chickens. Maybe you want to get goats. Maybe you want to get other different types of animals. But today, we're going to welcome Jeanette Barringer. She's with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. She is the Research and Technical Programs Manager there. And she's going to be talking about today how a person can decide on what species and breed of livestock or poultry will work on their property. So it's something, you know, yeah, it's great. So it's something that we can all learn from, big or small, and she's going to share her expertise regarding that. So again, great show today, how a person can decide on what species and breed of livestock or poultry will work on their property. And Pat, I have been confirmed that I will be a guest speaker and will be attending their annual meeting in Raleigh this year in November. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. I think we're going to do
a fun meeting.
I can't wait, and I got to see if Steve Pope's going to be there because I want to bring my Italian dressing so he can whip up something.
I believe he is. I think he's on the schedule.
I'm going to bring I'll bring him a case of Italian dressing so he can fix some awesome chicken dish with Italian dressing for the whole group. But I'm definitely looking forward to that. I think I'll be doing what I normally do across the country and be kind of it's just called Getting Started with Backyard Poultry, and it touches a little bit about everything for the new backyard chicken owner or the prospective backyard chicken owner. And, I mean, it just, again, covers just a little bit about everything. And I may be completely wrong with this. I know Jeanette's and Q listening. Because I know that a lot of places around Raleigh have recently allowed chickens. I think Cary's one of them, and there's some others. And I think in Google Alerts there was another one that actually had come and was looking at changing the laws in the Cary area recently. And so this may be something that I'll do where the public can be invited as well. I don't know that Jeanette can explain all that to us, but that'll be my little portion of that. And looking forward to it because awesome. By then, if everything works out, we'll have our camper and we'll just come up there to Raleigh and find a little place to camp with the camper and en route to there and en route from there, we're going to be stopping at our fans' houses. We'll see who lives on that route. We'll stop and videotape and meet some of our fans and see their setups. It's just really exciting. The camper purchase is going to make so many things just come to life with the tour and the show and the fans. So. We're really, really looking forward to that. So, but hey, you know, while we've got her in queue, there's no reason to delay. Real quick, we are actually after the segment today, the educational segment, we'll have some chickens in the news, and we're giving away 25 vintage style egg cartons from Tuesday sponsor eggcartons.com. Everybody loves these; they're very hot, they're very popular. 25, a pack of 25 vintage style egg cartons from eggcartons.com. If you want to participate in the trivia that we'll have towards the end of the show, and so
great.
We'll have that.
And I've got to tell you too, Whisper. I need to sign off a little bit before one.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm working this afternoon, so I gotta get my lab jacket on.
That sounds fine. I think we're going from 12:15 to 12:45 with Jeanette, so that'll work out just perfectly. No problem at all. Yep. So let's go ahead and go to the phone lines, and let's see. We're going to go ahead and welcome Jeanette Barringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Welcome, Jeanette.
Well, that's quite a welcome there.
Well, actually, you lucked out because normally when we welcome Pat, she gets to hear. just kidding, Pat.
It's true. I love to have fun.
We have
more respect for you, Jeanette. So welcome to the show. As we said before. We're usually an equal opportunity offender, but you've lucked out today.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, Pat. Exactly. If you don't get offended on today's show, please tune in tomorrow because something will happen. Got to love it. Well, Jeanette, great topic today, and we are all ears, and of course, fans, if you haven't learned yet to have a spiral notebook near the computer with a big CW across the cover to take notes, then you're really missing out. I know you can listen to the archives, all 600-plus of them, but it's great to jot this, a lot of this stuff down if it pertains to you or interests you. So we'll go ahead and get started.
Yeah, you know, the subject really was at the forefront of my mind this week in particular, because we just finished our veterans workshop on this past Friday and Saturday, and the workshop really was all about helping people to decide, you know, if they want to make the leap into keeping animals, what species is going to work for you, because sometimes it may not be really obvious that one species might fit better than another. And so, you know, I thought that might be a good topic for today's show, because I think we haven't talked about it in quite a while. And it really does form a big bulk of what I do here at the office, is walk people through the process of understanding what's going to fit their expectations and their property best. And people find it, if you, you know, think about this methodically and really take the time and do your research to understand what it is you want from these animals and, you know, what ones are going to fit on that property, that, you know, you get Mother Nature working in your favor, and, you know, the animals end up being a pretty good fit in the long run. And so many people make the leap into getting an animal because they just think, oh, that's really cool. And, you know, they like the look of it and then get it on the property and, you know, face an almost constant battle of helping that animal integrate into a system that maybe it wasn't meant to be in. And a classic example is like Highland cattle. So many people love Highland cattle, and they are great cow. But, you know, in like southern climates, it's probably not the best fit. And, you know, they're shaggy cattle that are cold adapted. They're really well adapted for, you know, cold, wet climates in Scotland. And, you know, having them here in the southeast, it's a challenge to have them, you know, unless you want to shave them down. And, you know, most of the Highlands I see, you know, midday, they're all standing in water trying to keep cool. And same thing with the Galloways, too. You know, up the road, we have a farm that has, like, belted Galloways. Galloway's another really well cold-adapted breed. And to keep the Galloways happy up the road, they actually have misters on them. You know, so talk about waste of water. You know, you're wasting all this water just to keep your cows cool. It's like, why don't you just get a cow that's heat adapted? But, you know,
that's like you have to irrigate your flock just to keep it adapted. That's crazy, isn't it?
Well, it is. Oh, but, you know, some people just really like the look for whatever reason. And, okay, if you like Oreo cookie cows, that's fine. But, you know, it's really not the best fit for this region. They do dynamite in New England, where a bulk of the Galloways are up in the Northeast. And, you know, the northern Midwestern states, but, you know, it's just a little bit wacky. But, you know, what we try to do is, you know, I really put people through the ringer as far as asking them questions, because it really helps us to focus in on where you need to go. And, you know, I'll give you a good example, a gentleman who is retiring and wanted to get a farm here in Silk Hope, and was trying to decide, you know, what should I get? And he has a good chunk of land. You know, he's got maybe 60-some-odd acres. And so, you know, we started him through the process of trying to understand what it is he wants. And, you know, he knew he wanted some kind of grazer because he's got, you know, plenty of grass. He's got major predator issues. And so, you know, getting something like goats or sheep, you know, you're really going to have to ensure that you've got good guardian animals to be able to protect them from those predators, because they've got bobcat and coyote and then neighborhood dogs. And so we kind of narrowed it down to, well, they didn't really want guardian animals right now, and they needed something a little more self-sufficient. And so we decided upon cattle. And then we went to look at the different types of cattle and also compare that to their experience. And they had some cattle experience. You know, they'd been, once we decided that maybe cattle was the right idea, they actually went to a dude ranch to spend a few weeks being around cattle to see if, you know, they even like being around cattle.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
it is.
Big step for them because, you know, if you're making the investment, you better darn well like the animals. And mm-hmm. they came back even more enamored of the cow idea. And so, you know, we walked them through then the process of what breeds are going to work. And they decided they wanted something Spanish looking, and we went with the Piney Woods. And the Piney Woods, depending on the strain that you get, some of them will, as my dear friend Justin T. Pitts would say, will eat your lunch. and then there are other strains that are very tame. And so what I did was lead them in the direction of breeders that selected heavily for temperament. And, you know, it took about a year for them to really figure out what they want and where they were going to get it. They even went down to visit with the farmers to see what the cows look like and to talk at length with them. And, you know, everything fit. And so I was so pleased. I got a phone call from them about 3 weeks ago that the cattle arrived. And so I had to run over there and see their new cattle. And I it's such a great feeling to see a project like this from beginning to end where, you know, you start with this idea and, you know, the cattle finally arrive and everything's in place. Like, they got the electric fence, the automatic waterers. They've got, you know, the knowledge to be able to manage those animals. They've got all the equipment they need to move or restrain those animals. And, you know, they're really setting themselves up for success that way. And so, you know, if you really want to be successful, it's more than just making the decision that, oh, I want to have, you know, animals on the farm or I just want to have cattle. If you can pick the right breed for the right situation, really, you know, keep it in your mind you don't want to fight Mother Nature. So, you know, that's one example. And on my farm, we kind of practiced that too. We knew that we wanted chickens, and chickens actually worked out quite well for us. And we got all our infrastructure in place, and then my former colleague Don Schreider was kind enough to give us our first batch of chickens when we first got there. And, you know, 7 years later, our chickens are doing great. They're just part of the farm. And you know, we've been expanding to other species. As you guys know, I got my Marsh Tacky horses, which, by the way, she finally had her foal the other day. We have a little Grulla filly now. And we went with the Marsh Tacky horses because this is a breed that spent 400 years in the Carolinas adapting to this climate.
Right.
And they're, you know, I'm living in Carolina. Why shouldn't I just get a horse from the Carolinas? And so they've worked out remarkably well. Had a little hiccup, a couple of hiccups here and there with fescue and, you know, but overall, these horses really have been everything that I expected them to be. You know, they don't mind the heat, and they certainly mind it a lot less than I do. And, you know, they've just been a really good fit. And after having them for a few years, we decided, okay, do we want anything else? And we tried out geese one season where we grew out geese just for the holidays to see if they might be something that would work on the farm, and come to find out we don't have enough water resources for the geese to keep them the way we want. And so after the holidays, we decided no more geese. And this year we're trying ducks. You know, we've got a small group of ducks. We're going to see, you know, does it become a burden to our workload to add ducks onto our farm? You know, we want to diversify, but not at the cost of making keeping up the farm not fun anymore. And, you know, knock on wood, so far so good. They're a lot less labor intensive for us compared to the geese. Although geese aren't all that hard to keep, it's just for the size of the area we're keeping them in. Seems like the ducks are working good so far, but you know, we're in the beginning stages of that. But so, you know, I encourage people when they decide to try a species, you know, don't jump in full force right away. Sometimes maybe just trying out a few and see how that works for you, you know, and if it works, then great. The following year you can maybe take on some more or decide, hey, maybe I want to breed these animals and you know, expand little by little. But that way, I think it makes the whole transition of getting a new species onto your property so much easier, and you feel good about it, and you feel like it's the right thing to do, you know. And so that's in the instance where I think, you know, hatchery birds tend to fill a great role in that instance. Rather than jumping in getting the rarest of the rare, maybe get some hatchery birds to see how they fit, and if they do, then you can take the next step to maybe get some from a reputable breeder and invest more money into quality stock and go from there. You know, we spend quite a bit of time walking folks through the process, you know, it really sets them up for success. Now, you know, there's another instance, you know, here's another scenario with a lady with a smaller piece of property. She's got grass, but really not enough for cattle, you know. And so we started thinking about goats for her because she really didn't want to shear. You know, because that's the first thing you ask about when you're looking at the smaller ruminants, and in particular sheep. Do you want to shear or you don't want to shear? Because sheep shearers are really, really hard to come by, and good sheep shearers even more so. And so I always try and tell people, if they're thinking about sheep, be prepared to do the shearing yourself. Otherwise, you could get into a hair sheep. But, you know, she didn't really want to go with sheep. It didn't seem to fit her interest. And so we started talking about goats and then walked through the process of what kind of goat she should get. And living in the Southeast, one of the top candidates would be Spanish goats. Spanish goats from the Southeast adapted to this climate and do particularly well in the heat and the humidity. They're very prolific. Easy keepers, but she was not adverse to the idea of having livestock guardians. As a matter of fact, she embraced that and did her research to pick a breed that she thought was going to work for her that had a reputable breeder within the area. And she got a couple of really wonderful dogs that, you know, God help any coyote that comes near those goats, because it ain't happening.
What breed did she get? Do you remember, Jeanette?
She got Kangal dogs, and you know, hers are about, oh gosh, I want to say they're about 120 pounds, mm-hmm. And they're a big dog, but man, they're svelte. And there was a really good breeder over in the Asheville area that guaranteed the dogs. So if the dogs weren't good guardians, that they would take them back. And a reputable guardian dog breeder will do that. And if they don't, then I'd suggest shopping somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
Same thing for, like, donkeys and llamas. There are a lot of them out there that, you know, they're selecting their animals specifically to be guardians. And reputable breeders will guarantee those animals. Because you never know, personality-wise, they, for whatever reason, they just might not work, you know, like, especially donkeys. Not every donkey ends up being the best guardian animal. Some of them would rather be with people or would rather be with another donkey and couldn't care less about the sheep or goats. But, you know, it varies.
Regarding the goats, is that you can't have your cake and eat it too, I'm sorry, with the donkeys, that if you have a donkey that's nice to you and the family, it probably won't be a good guardian. Or is, can you look out? Is it in that, in the donkey case, is it either or? You either have just this one mean heck donkey, or you have one that's nice to the family and might keep some predators away.
I think it's widely variable, because I've met some really great guardians that are friendly as all get out, and then I've met other guardians that were very aloof and just wanted to be with the, you know, with the herd. Same thing with dogs. You know, Don Schrider had this one Marimma cross who was the best guardian dog he had, but she was very aloof. You know, she just didn't want anything to do with people. On occasion, she'd get petted by him and his wife, but, you know, she just wanted to be with the sheep, and that's it. And so I think it's really variable by the individuals, because I think, you know, species to species, you've got some that are very friendly and some that aren't. I do find llamas tend to be mostly aloof, but that's kind of like llama attitude. You know, I don't know if you've ever been around llamas, but you know, they think very highly of themselves and can't be bothered by trivial things. But they're good guardians, I'll give them that. But you know, there's really a lot to the whole thought process, and I'm sure you guys have kind of encountered that with the poultry. You know, a chicken is not a chicken is not a chicken. You know, they're all very different in, mm-hmm. in ways that could be important, you know, in choosing, you know, chickens for different climates. You know, I hate it when I see, you know, when you're looking through poultry magazines and you see, you know, single comb birds that have been, have frostbitten tips, and I'm thinking to myself, why did you get that breed in a northern climate? It's like, ugh. Mm-hmm. You know. You know, we spend a lot of time, in particular with chickens, to try and make recommendations for breeds, because they're definitely, well, you know, they're egg layers, they're broilers, there's cold adapted, there's hot adapted. There's, you know, wild is all get out ones and tame ones. And so, but the beauty of chickens is that there's such a variety that, you know, you just keep narrowing down what that person's expecting and wants out of that bird. And lo and behold, you can really have a short list of breeds that'll work for them. And I just find that fascinating to be able to do that, you know. So
if somebody calls in, let's say, you know what, we're going to sell our big city house, we're going to move out to the country, we're going to live our dream, we've got, you know, 10 acres, 100 acres, whatever, then the ALBC would be a fabulous source for them to become friends with, to get used to contact you guys, and because they may just be 100% total novice and say, you know, we really want to have, of course, we want the chickens over here, we want maybe 4 goats, we'd like to have maybe, you know, a milk cow or two or whatever, then they can contact you guys, and y'all can kind of, based on where they're living, not only help them decide what breed may be best for them, being novice and being in the climate they live in, but also helping them find awesome breeders in the area are experts in that, or have specialty in those particular breeds.
Oh, absolutely. We do that all the time for folks, and you know, we get, you know, honestly, you know, dozens of calls and emails literally every day from folks, you know, just getting started or trying to understand how to incorporate a particular breed or species on their farm. And absolutely, we help with that process and walk folks through that. And, you know, you just give a call to the office or email, and we're there to help. And that's what we were doing with these veterans. You know, like I was saying earlier, these are people that, you know, want to change a pace and they're starting from scratch in many respects. And so we thought, well, let's just lay it all out, you know, the full spectrum of species, so that they can understand how they interrelate with each other. And that's the next step in the evolution of bringing animals onto the farm, is when you do decide to add another species, that you add something that's going to integrate well with what you already have. You know, you always want like a supplementary or a complementary addition to the farm. You don't want to have something that's going to, you know, completely compete with your other species. You know, with chicken and horses, it works out great because the chickens help disperse the manure in the field and, you know, help reduce the fly larvae, and they're really not competing for resources with the horses, and they're serving a function, you know, in the process. So the two work really well together and really complement each other. And, you know, with, say, for instance, if you've already got chickens and you want to add more chickens, you know, if you're planning on breeding, you know, you're setting yourself up for a competitive relationship with the breed that's already there. And that's fine so long as you realize that, you know, say, for instance, you've got, you know, Java chickens and you're breeding them. You've got, you know, your breeding pens and then you have your grow-out pens. And, you know, that's a good chunk of space. But now if you're going to add another breed, well, that means you have to double your capacity for the other breed. You know, you're going to have two breeding pens and two grow-out pens, or, you know, if you're lucky, maybe one grow-out pen if you can grow out all the chicks together. But, you know, you're pitting one breed against the other. And, you know, Fred and I, we came into that situation where, you know, we found ourselves the owners of some Nankin chickens, and we really, really liked the Nankins. They were a blast. Anybody looking for a little chicken that's just a delight, Nankins are fabulous little chickens. But it soon became clear that, you know, we needed to commit to one breed and one breed alone if we wanted to do it right. And with the Nankins, they really needed some good stewards that were making careful selection for good combs, good color. And we realized, you know, we were going to need to double or even triple what we were going to do, because we had, you know, in the population of Nankins, we had single combs and we had rose combs. So we were going from one breed to, you know, almost a three-breed situation. And as much as we enjoyed the Nankins, we realized we weren't going to be able to do a great job with the Buckeyes if we had to spread ourselves so thin. And so we ended up giving our whole Nankin flock to someone who only specializes in Nankins and could do a really good job with Nankins. And so, you know, that's how we kind of came into, you know, trying out the waterfowl a little bit to see, you know, are they going to work? Are they going to complement what we're already doing? Or are they going to really compete with what we're doing with the chickens? And so, you know, so that's how we're kind of making our decision right now. We're just trying it out to see how it goes. We're not committing. So, yeah, do you guys run into that quite a bit with helping folks select breeds? Like, do you get calls for, you know, asking for what kind of breeds work out? Or
yeah, I get that a lot for the new timers, and you know, it's, I'll elaborate a little bit on the heat issue, cold issue, large combs, things like that. I'll introduce them to, you know, the ALBC heritage breeds. They may not have heard that terminology before. Finding breeds that may have been developed in their area, like the Buckeye and whatnot. And but, you know, I've found, and I teach this in the classes, that, you know, I've come across three different ways people pick out their breeds. Number one, you have the couple or the family that does months and months of research and, you know, McMurray catalog and online, find out the developer, where they're developed, what country, all everything they could possibly know about these, you know, three, four, five different breeds they want in their backyard, and they'll spend months doing it. Then you'll have a couple or a family that will pick their chickens out based on, you know what, grandma and grandpa had these on their farm, so I want those too. And, you know, a great memory and carry on the tradition. Maybe it's three or four different breeds they remember from the farm growing up at grandpa's, and then that's how they pick their chickens. And then the third group, basically, they know they want some backyard chickens. They've thought about it for a while. They just happen to walk into, say, Tractor Supply one day and see them that they're there and say, oh, okay, well, they're here. Let's go ahead and get them. And then they'll have the little boy or little girl basically pick them out by, ooh, mommy, I like that one with the little dot on its head. Or, ooh, mommy, this one's over here by itself. It needs a friend. I'll take that one home. Or, oh, mommy, this one over here, look, I like the color of its wings. Let's get that one. And, you know, all three, I guess, are not wrong ways of doing it, but that's the top three ways that I see how people choose their breeds is the super researcher, the, oh, I remember daddy had this one, I want this one, or let's just have the kids pick them out based on which ones are the cutest in the bucket.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, if they ask or send us an email or what have you, then, yeah, we'll talk about some of the specifics of breeds and hotter, mostly it's hotter, cold climates. Is what they're mainly looking for, you know, South Florida or Wisconsin or something like that. How about you, Pat? Pat may still be on mute. Let me make sure I still have her live on the switchboard. Oh, we lost Pat. She's not on the switchboard anymore, so I thought she was going to be able to stay until about 1 o'clock, but she may have got called in early because I don't see her on the switchboard anymore. So so that's mainly when we get folks asking about that. It's kind of what I tell them, and that's the three ways that I normally see how people get their chickens or choose their chickens.
Yeah. The other major consideration, you know, when we do find the right fit, we start working on infrastructure with folks to get them to understand the basic necessities that will make your life oh so easier in keeping these animals. And we find a lot of newbies kind of skip over some things to get because they might not have enough money to get it. And it ends up potentially causing problems in the future. One of the big things I always suggest to people and hope to make the conversion at my place because I'm dying for them is, you know, automatic waterers. You know, keeping the, you know, it not only helps you to conserve water, but, you know, the biggest time burden we have in taking care of the animals is managing the water. And for people just getting started, I always try to get them to think about the automatic waterers and then the infrastructure that is going to support the safety of animals. And a lot of folks think that, you know, you can keep, like, say, for instance, chickens behind chicken wire. Well, you know, raccoons can rip it apart like nothing. And so you need to have something a little more secure than just chicken wire. And, and then talk about the possibility of a barn they can be locked in or a chicken tractor that's a little more secure. With the larger livestock, something that I really feel strongly that people should have that not everybody thinks is a priority is a way to move that animal. I know so many people that get horses or get cattle and they don't have a stock trailer. And
right.
So, how are you going to get them off the farm, you know? Or you get goats and sheep and you don't have a big enough crate to be able to move those animals. And so when you are getting some of these species, you know, make sure you have something that allows you to be able to move the animal. One of the guys that's in the Java project with us, he was able to move his entire flock off his property when the last hurricane blew through. And unfortunately, his house didn't make it through the hurricane, but his chickens did. You know, he was able to move the chickens and get them out of there. And, and that's something to think about. If you've got a really big flock, what happens if you've got a big storm coming? What are you going to do? Just leave them there? Or are you going to try and, you know, get them moved or get them into some secure housing? It's really something to think about as far as, careful management of animals is, preparing for potential disaster, or there could be fires moving in,
right?
You know, what have you? So, beyond great advice, we try to advise on basic infrastructure so that it makes your life easier and your animals more secure in the long run.
Is that something that y'all talk about when you're getting people started? Because I'm trying to think. I wonder how many people have large livestock that don't have a way to get it off of their farm or their homestead. You know, trailers are expensive. Of course, keeping horses are expensive. That's why we don't have any.
Been down
that road before. But I'm just trying to think. You know, do you find it that more times than not people, because they figure, oh, the vet will come here, I'm running a blank, to do the hooves, you know, they'll come out
farrier,
they'll come out and the vet will come out and worm and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, everybody's coming here to take care of the animals and they just don't think about getting them somewhere.
Sure. I think a lot of folks are like that, or they depend upon their neighbor having a stock trailer, and I think it's worth the investment in the long run. We had gotten our stock trailer for our horses, and when you don't have a trailer, then what happens when you want to go riding? You know, if you don't have trails close to your house, then you get some pretty limited options. And and what if the animal gets sick or gets injured and you need emergency treatment, you know, something the vet can't do at the farm, then, you know, you're out of luck, or you're going to pay a ton of money to get someone else to transport that animal. And so that's why I threw that in there, because for folks thinking about large livestock, bite the bullet and get yourself a stock trailer, you know, and it'll really be a worthwhile investment. For us, it's actually worked out quite well, because now that we have a stock trailer, we can buy animals on the hoof, and when we want to get, you know, beef or lamb or what have you, we get the stock trailer to go pick it up and bring it to the processor, and it's been an extremely cost-effective way to get good quality meat into our freezer. And, it's just because we have the stock trailer around. So it's actually paid for itself, because we've been able to do so much with that stock trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And now
you can, if people need to borrow it, you can say, yeah, you know, it's $80 an hour. $125 an hour, would be more than happy to help you. So just let me know when and where to show up, and have your cash ready.
it really has paid for itself. And so I guess what I want to leave folks with today is just in understanding this, bringing animals onto the farm is really a process, and you know, it shouldn't be taken lightly, in that if well thought out, you can be very happy with the results if you plan properly. And so the listeners there are welcome to call ALBC. We'll walk you through the process to find the right fit, and hopefully everybody will make out in the end, including the animals.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us again this month. Awesome topic, awesome information, a lot of neat things to actually think about if you're looking at and what a great resource, folks. We encourage you to, of course, join them and support them, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. You can go to www.albc-usa.org. That's www.albc-usa.org. And is it $35, I think, to become a general member?
Yes, it is. It'll be best $35 you ever spent.
But I know for a fact, since I've joined, I've probably received more than $35 in books and catalogs and newsletters. I joined, the next thing I know, I'm getting these big, huge, thick books mailed to me, so I probably have more than doubled my investment in paper already.
Well, we've also found too, during the workshop over the weekend, one of the speakers was saying how she used to spend a ton of money putting ads in different publications to sell her sheep. And since we've got our online directory and classifieds, she doesn't need to advertise in other publications anymore, that she's able to sell everything she has right through the ALBC directory and classifieds. And you can only have you can only post in there if you're an ALBC member. Anybody can look at it, but only ALBC members can post their animals for sale or be in the breeder's directory as a member. So, yeah, I was quite pleased to hear that.
Definitely check them out and join up and support this awesome group. And give them a call if you've got questions. That's why they are there. So, Jeanette, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next month. And then, of course, definitely looking forward to the annual event in Raleigh.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Pleasure talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Right, bye.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's StrombergsChickens.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And very entertaining here. I'm watching my wife use my ham radio antenna I got for my birthday that I haven't mounted on anything yet, watching her use this long ham radio antenna to try to reach under the couch to get a box of organic peanut butter cookies that fell behind the couch yesterday evening. It's quite funny. Oh, my goodness gracious. Life on a homestead. So, got to love it. Her and her organic peanut butter cookies. So, be careful now. That's a nice ham radio antenna now. which is going to be mounted on top of the camper when we get it. Did you get them? All righty. Jen now is in heaven because she has her organic peanut butter cookies. Oh, my goodness gracious. Hey, it is time for our Chickens in the News segment, and we'll start off with one that I posted yesterday, which is creating a little bit of a stir and some excitement as well around the Orlando, Florida area there in the city of Orlando, Florida. Somebody had a really funny post on our Facebook page. They said, I don't see what the big deal is about chickens in Orlando. They let big mice with big ears run around Orlando all the time. Oh, gotta love it. You know, down there at Disney, if you didn't, they let mice with big old ears run around Orlando all the time. What's the big deal about a few chickens? So Orlando crowing over allowing urban chickens. And let's see, Orlando is clucking over a new pilot program that will allow residents to keep urban chickens in backyard coops. City officials say they've been henpecked by earthy, crunchy homeowners. Never heard them quite described like that. Earthy, crunchy? Have you heard that term before? Maybe I've heard, you know, granola or, yeah, Jen's crunching on some organic peanut butter cookies. So they have been henpecked by earthy, crunchy homeowners who want fresh eggs free of chemicals and pesticides. So Monday, this past Monday, yesterday, matter of fact, the city council approved a test program to allow pet chickens at 25 homes in three of Orlando's six city council districts. And I'm sure there'll be some more. It's a way to bring a little bit of farming into the big city, said Colonial Town North resident Lindsay Hodges, who approached her city commissioner about changing Orlando's no-chicken policy. So-called urban chickens are allowed in 11 cities in Florida, including St. Petersburg, Lakeland, Miami, and, of course, Key West. But Orlando is the first in Central Florida. Oviedo may be known for roaming chickens, but those birds are outlaws. It's part of a larger sustainability trend that encourages people to grow their own food nationwide. There are at least 161 cities that allow residents to keep chickens. They include big cities such as New York, Chicago, and L.A. Orlando is behind the curve when it comes to poultry, said Dennis Mulge, the University of Florida Animal Science Extension agent for Orange County. The amount of requests for this is just amazing, he said. Orlando is loaded with pet parakeets and pigeons and other birds, but for some reason we discriminate against chickens. That changes, at least for now, under what City Hall is officially calling the Urban Chickens Pilot Program. The first 25 households to meet city requirements will be allowed to keep as many as three hens. Oh my gosh, stop the presses. Three chickens? The world's coming to an end. Roosters and early morning crowing remain unwelcome in the city. More than a dozen people have already signed up, including Commissioner Patty Sheehan, who championed the proposal. I love gardening. I love fresh eggs. Provided by healthy chickens, says Sheehan, who used to work for the Florida Department of Agriculture and helped develop Orlando's program. There's a real difference in the quality of the egg. The taste is so much better. So we're going to see basically how long this will – I'm trying to see if it says here how long the pilot program will be. And I just don't see it where it says in the article how long this program, the pilot program, will last. But I guess what will happen is they'll see that there will be probably zero complaints about the 25 homeowners that get these backyard pet chickens. And then they'll have no reason but to, using their own information, make a permanent law for everybody in Orlando, if they want to get backyard chickens. So how awesome is that? Congratulations to the great folks over in Orlando. So very good. And seeing what's over in the chat room here real quick. Yeah, over in Norway, the Andreas is saying they don't have any no chickens, no chicken cities, so that he knows of. So, yeah, awesome, awesome. Good luck to you there, Andreas, over in Norway. Thanks for tuning in today, by the way. And while I'm thanking people for tuning in, I want to say thank you very much to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when you're while needing to stay awake at 3 a.m., we thank you for tuning in. Thank you very much to all the homeschoolers that tune in and use the show for a portion of your curriculum. And also want to say a big thank you to all the feed and seed stores and farm stores across the country that stream this radio show live for your customers every day, Monday through Friday, starting at 12 p.m. I've got some others here I'm going to read. I've got a couple here before we get to our contest today from eggcartons.com. And this is pretty neat. This is the first time I've read this. I will be posting it on our Facebook page a little later, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. If I can get this to load, this comes to us from CNBC. May have had a segment on television about this. World Chefs, Backyard Chickens Inspire New Cookbook. This comes out of New York, Rutgers. Years ago, Jennifer Trainer Thompson and her family started raising chickens in their backyard in western Massachusetts. A coop and a small flock later, they have more fresh eggs than they need. Thompson started inventing ways to feed her family eggs without boring them, which led to the Fresh Egg Cookbook, a collection of recipes using backyard or locally farmed eggs. Not only does she provide advice for poaching eggs, baking them inside meringue pies, and tossing them in salads and salad dressings and smoothies, Thompson also offers personal stories from her own backyard. Among the cookbook's photographs and recipes, Thompson describes her nervousness when she picked up two-day-old chicks at her post office. Her son's escapades selling extra eggs to neighbors, and then the quirky personalities of her hens. She spoke to Reuters about fresh eggs, raising chickens, and presenting a dozen brown, blue, and green speckled eggs to her dinner party hosts instead of a bottle of wine. People just love them, she said. Question, using fresh eggs, you are able to revive some old recipes featuring raw eggs. What's the appeal? Raw eggs certainly allow you to resurrect old recipes. For Easter this year, we had real hollandaise sauce over roasted asparagus. It was delicious. In the 60s and 70s, restaurants tossed up a Caesar salad on the table and threw a raw egg into the dressing. Now you rarely get anchovies in Caesar dressing, and you certainly don't get a raw egg. It's just a different taste entirely. How can you tell an egg is really fresh? Answer, there's an old sink or swim test where you drop an egg into salted water. A fresh egg that was laid up to 3 days ago will sink. Most other eggs will float halfway up into the water. I wouldn't eat raw eggs unless they were laid in your own backyard or you know where they came from. Ask the farmer at the farmer's market when the eggs were laid. Question, what's the difference between an egg that comes from a grocery store versus your own backyard or local farms? Well, one thing is the color. The yolk is affected by what a hen eats. Hens that are fed food scraps and given free range in a pasture have a deeper yellow yolk, almost orange, while commercial eggs have yolks that are lemon yellow and pale. I know of a woman in Louisiana that fed her hens the remains from a crawfish boil, and the yolks turned blood orange. It's also really hard to peel a fresh egg. What about the color of the shell? The shell is entirely dependent on the breed of the chicken. Some lay brown, some lay white, and of course some lay blue and green colored eggs. What egg recipe do you want everyone to know about? I think the soufflés. Before I did this book, I was completely intimidated by soufflés, and then I thought I have to conquer this fear because I was getting so many eggs every day from my chickens. I realized how elegant soufflés are. They're sort of like a stealth missile in the kitchen. It seems raising chickens has become somewhat of a fad over the last few years. What's the appeal? People are interested in eating organic and eating healthy and locally. I think parents of young children want to teach their kids these lessons early, and chickens are a great and easy way to follow the source of their food. And lots of other information here, including a recipe. So, again, Backyard Chickens Inspire, a new cookbook. I'm guessing you'll be able to find that cookbook on Amazon. I'm going to share one more with you here. See which one might be up. Here's one. Here's one I think we might want to read. We can address this, okay? This ends up being a letter to the editor here. Chickens don't belong in the city. We've had some positive ones. We'll have a negative story. Chickens don't belong in the city. This is in response to the April 22nd letter by Becky Crumweed, Backyard Chickens Have Advantages, and her support of the organization City Peeps. We're from a family farm background and see the disadvantages of having backyard chickens in Appleton. Okay, number one, we're talking a family farm. Number one, when we get folks that say, well, I was born on a farm, I was raised on a farm, I lived on a farm, we're not talking about a farm, okay? We're talking about an urban backyard with six chickens, not a farm setting, okay? One is an offensive smell, especially on hot summer days. What happens after the novelty wears off and it becomes a continuous chore of caring for the chickens? Then what, okay? I've had chickens for a decade, and caring for them is not a chore. It's quite enjoyable, and it's not really hard at all. So she's talking about an offensive smell, especially on hot summer days. Okay, this goes back to our initial her quote where she said they're from a family farm. So obviously you were either doing it wrong, or you have no idea what you're talking about. And because have you? I'll just ask this young lady: have you ever owned just six chickens? Have you ever had just six chickens in your backyard? And you can actually share your experiences with just six chickens. No? Oh, you can't? Oh, okay. So it's a moot point. You come from a family farm with maybe hundreds of chickens, and you probably didn't have a specific coop you locked them in at night. They probably were free range. They probably didn't have predator fences up that were buried 18 inches in the ground with poultry netting above it, and you didn't have just 6, 8, or 10 chickens that were maintained properly. If you had a huge, nasty stink, you probably had tons of chickens, or you weren't caring for them properly. So right here in her article, she's, to me, explaining how she didn't take care of her farm or her chickens properly if they had a horrible, offensive smell. What happens after the novelty wears off and it becomes a continuous chore of caring for the chickens, then what? Okay, she's obviously never had 6 or 8 chickens. If she had 200, 300, or 6,000, then maybe she considered it a continuous chore of taking care of that many, but it's a joy to take care of 6, 10, or 12 chickens in an urban backyard. City Peeps estimates that 15 to 50 people may be interested in raising chickens in Appleton. What about the people living in the neighborhood or next door? If you ask a person who lived on a farm and raised chickens if they would recommend chickens should be raised in city residential areas, the answer would be no. Again, we're not talking about a farm, Bob and Donna Stanek, Bob and Donna Stanek. Okay, we're not talking about a farm. You may have lived on a farm or were raised on a farm or maybe even visited a farm with several hundred chickens. It's a moot point. It's like comparing apples to oranges. Six chickens. Bob and Donna, have you ever owned just six chickens? Okay, if you haven't, then you have no experience with this. You know, we're not talking about 6,000 chickens. Okay. Appleton City government personnel are working on a backyard chicken ordinance now. If you're against someone raising chickens in Appleton or their property or your neighborhood or next door, contact your alderman and voice your disapproval. And so very, very, very interesting. I may have to comment on this a little bit later and explain to them that we're not talking about a farm. We're talking about three chickens, not 300, not 600, not 6,000, not 60,000. And that's the big issue. When we started fighting for backyard poultry a long time ago, we would have people stand up. I remember, you know, one of the first times we encountered this. Well, I was raised on a farm, and I can remember having to sit outside with a shotgun to keep the predators away. I remember it be stinking. The chickens would get all over our vehicles. They would come up on the front porch and poop everywhere and all. And so, at first, you just want to stand up and say, you know what? If you had all those problems, guess what? You were doing it wrong. but that's kind of rude and kind of harsh, and you're not going to win any friends that way. So you have to basically take each individual complaint they had and address it to where it's pertinent. Okay, sir, you said you lived on a farm. Okay, we're not, number one, talking about a farm. We're talking about an urban area. We're talking about 6 chickens. How many chickens did you have, sir? Oh, we probably had a few hundred. Okay, a few hundred. We're not talking about a few hundred. We're talking about 6. Have you ever owned just 6 chickens? Well, no. Well, then how do you know with 6 chickens you're going to have the same problems as 600? Okay, so already we're right off the bat, you're talking about something that we're not talking about. It's a moot point because it's 600 chickens, not just 6. You also stated that you had to stand out there with a shotgun to prevent predators from getting your chickens. So tell me about your setup. Did you have a coop you locked them in at night? No, you didn't? Okay, did you have a fence around the run that the coop was in? Was the coop, you know, buried, you know, 18 inches deep? Did you have poultry netting above your coop so it was predator-proof so you wouldn't have to sit out there with a shotgun and defend them from predators? Oh, no, you didn't? Oh, okay, well, again, you were doing it wrong. You're talking about apples and oranges. I'm sorry, sir. We're talking about 6 chickens in an urban backyard with a nice little coop with a run around it that is predator-proof, so you don't have to stand out there with a shotgun like you did when you were doing it wrong. So again, you just try to take each individual thing there. Chickens stink. Oh, really? They stunk on your farm? Well, let's try to figure out why they stunk on your farm and why 6 chickens aren't going to stink in my backyard. Did you have them in an area with wood chips? And could you till it? Could you put some lime out there for them? They just ran around, or they had just this big yard that they were in all the time? Okay, did you add any bedding to them? No, you didn't? Oh, interesting. So they stunk. But how many chickens did you have again? 600? Oh, okay. So you're talking about 600 chickens stinking, but we're talking about 6 in a backyard. So again, have you ever had just 6 chickens that you've dealt with? No? Oh, okay. So again, you're admitting that you don't have no idea what we're talking about with just 6 chickens. Okay, well, thank you very much. Sit down now. So you just, again, instead of actually just getting up mean, standing up and saying, well, obviously you didn't know what the heck you were doing when you were farming chickens, because you wouldn't have had those problems if you did, and sounding mean and say, we're not talking about a farm. We're talking about urban agriculture. So, you know, you just try to address each problem that they come up and they stand up and talk about and basically blow it out of the water with information. And you just show them how wrong that they actually are. And having heard CW go through this routine with anti-chicken idiots, yeah, that's it. He's good. Thanks, Poet's Wife. I appreciate that. Poet's Wife's up in Nashville. And, yeah, it's just one of those things. We've been doing this for so long. We love doing it. It's you know, we hate, or I wish that I wouldn't have to travel around the country and help people fight for chickens, because it's one day maybe it'll happen where people will catch on. But that's one thing this camper is going to let us do, is we can say, hey, they need us in North Carolina next Tuesday. With both of our jobs, we have the ability to travel, and we'll see if we can get, you know, say, hey, you know, if you can, we'll see if we can't do that a little bit more now. So thank you very much, Poet's Wife. She has experienced what we do and how we do that, and the effectiveness that we have with that. I just told a good friend in Panama City Beach, Virginia Beach, the fight there is getting very ugly, and I told her that maybe we can make Virginia Beach a stop on our big tour here in July, and talk with the city council members if there happens to be a city council meeting while we're there, or maybe just kind of hit the news agencies and talk about, you know, the facts about keeping back yard poultry. So it's I don't want to say it's an art, but you know, I can say that we're at the point now, we've been doing this so much, I would be very surprised if somebody could come up with an argument that we could not actually blow out of the water, or we could not defend making that a moot point. So, because we've heard it so often and so many times that when they say something negative, we have a positive immediately to counteract their negative, that actually in most cases would make their negative a moot point to where it makes not even any sense for arguing that. So that is a part of our specialty, is going around and helping people fight for chicken laws. And we're going to see how much we can do that on the tour in July. And from this point on, once we get this awesome tour vehicle that we're hoping to get. So thanks very much for those comments. And we've helped a lot of people, and we're very proud of that. And it is now time for a contest. All righty. What we're going to do is let me get over here to the switchboard, and then let me get back over here to the chat room. And let me explain, today is Tuesday. Every Tuesday is brought to you by our good friends over at eggcartons.com. Visit them online. They do offer, I'm pretty sure they still offer free shipping on all their egg cartons and egg crates. Not on every product they carry, but I believe shipping is included. When you go to buy the cartons, I think they ship free. On the egg cartons and egg crates still at eggcartons.com. This product, this prize we're giving away today is very, very popular. Tons and tons of comments. Everybody seems to love them once they've tried them. Even today when I posted on Facebook, we had someone comment and say, hey, I won some of these, and then since I had bought some more because they're awesome and I love them. And they kind of bring back memories for a lot of people because they are the old classic vintage style egg cartons, which instead of having two rows of six like the cartons today, they have three rows of four, and so lots of people like them because they bring back memories. Some people just like that style different. It's just something different when you're giving away eggs or selling your eggs. It's just, it kind of pops because it's different than all of the other cartons that you might see. And so the prize today is 25 of these vintage style egg cartons from eggcartons.com shipped directly to your front door. And we're going to take, let me get over here to the switchboard. We're going to basically take caller number 8. We do 7 a lot. We do 9 a lot. We do 10. Let's do caller number 8. Caller number 8, I'll give you the question here in a minute. 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. And I've kind of got a neat little kind of trivia question. If you've been paying attention either on our Facebook page or on the radio show here the last few episodes, and that has, because I'm so excited, it does have to do with our upcoming July tour. We're hoping to spend about 7 days on this specific tour before we land and end up in Florida, where we can spend another roughly 7 days as having a little end of the summer vacation with the family before the school year starts for Jen, and the fall gets started for me as well. And so on our Facebook page, we actually posted a route, or a proposed and a tentative route, for our upcoming summer Chicken Whisperer 2012 tour. And I've talked about it many times, that we're basically going to start to Atlanta, and we're going to head west down a particular highway and end up in where? Not, and so basically, if you can tell us, basically on, in the route, the really one of the first big major cities that we'll stop at, we're going to start in Atlanta, and we're going to head west down this highway towards this big city. We will make stops along that route, hopefully visiting fans and seeing their coops and videoing that and posting it on our Facebook page, maybe stopping if someone needs help fighting City Hall, maybe stopping and seeing a couple of our sponsors if they are in that particular segment of our trip. But the first segment of the trip is basically from Atlanta to blank, following this particular highway. And I've mentioned this many, many times, and it's even been posted on our Facebook page as well. 347-637-3237. Let's see how many people have been paying attention to that. 347-637-3237, the big 2012 summer tour, Chicken Whisperer tour, we're going to be doing in July. We're starting in Atlanta. We're heading west towards blank. When we get to the city blank, then we're going to actually head north up to Oklahoma City. Okay, I think we've scratched Denver. I think we said we're going from this city blank up to Oklahoma City, and from Oklahoma City head over to St. Louis. And so that's what we're looking for. We go from Atlanta over to this city blank down this particular highway, and then from that city we go up to, I think, Oklahoma City, and then we're going to head over to St. Louis, and then we're going to head over towards, I think it's Louisville, Kentucky. We may stop in Cincinnati at Mount Healthy Hatchery, and then head over to Virginia Beach, Virginia, with Tracy Okor, and try to talk some sense into her city council members, her county commissioners over there at Virginia Beach. It's kind of our game plan. So the phone line, the switchboard is starting to light up, and so some of you have been paying attention. That's what we're looking for. 347-637-3237. And it's just a really exciting time for us. You know, we've been talking about doing, you know, we've toured a lot. Y'all know, long time. We've been, holy cow, 2 years ago, man, we took a 10-day period. We were in Atlanta. We were in Savannah. We were in Nashville. We were in New York. We were in St. Louis. We were in out in Texas. So, I mean, in a 10-day period, we were flying all over the country. And I think it was the 2010 Chicken Whisperer Tour. So we are not strangers of traveling. We've taken trains, planes, and automobiles. We love to take Amtrak. We stride up the East Coast up to Hershey, Pennsylvania 1 year. It was just absolutely fun. So no stranger to travel. But this, with this new travel trailer that we're looking at picking up in July, give us so much freedom. It'll make the trip more affordable for our for the feed and seeds and our sponsors, having to save a little bit on hotel expense. If we plan a round trip, maybe a 1,000-mile trip or a 2,000-mile trip, and we're on that trip, and we're going on that trip anyway, then a lot of other dealers and sponsors can benefit from that one trip. Versus having a trip here, a trip there, because they can share the travel costs and things like that. So we're really excited, and it'll give us the opportunity to just pick up and go whenever we're needed to go and fight for backyard poultry across the country. Power to the poultry is our basically our slogan here at Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, and we're really anxious to do this and especially meet our awesome fans and get a lot of this on videotape so those who are not on the route can still enjoy the trip. So we're really excited about it, getting the vehicle all set up to be towed, getting the ham radio stuff up, CB in the car, the trailer hitches, the whole nine yards. Just very exciting time for us as we plan on hitting the road and really seeing our fans out there on the road. Oh, we're going to stop at Gene's place, over here. So the question today, we're going to take caller number 8, 347-637-3237. We're starting in Atlanta. We're heading west down a particular highway, and we're going to stop at this city. We'll have stops along the way, but that first segment is from Atlanta to blank, and that's what we want to know. This is for 25 vintage-style egg cartons from our good friends at eggcartons.com. Let's go ahead and go over here to the phone lines. Caller, now don't hang up as soon as I go to this caller, because you might be caller number, say, 9. Caller number 8 gets it wrong, then we'll go to caller number 9. If 9 gets it wrong, we'll go to caller number 10. So don't hang up until they reveal the right answer. So let's go to the phone lines. Caller calling in from area code 214. 214, you're live on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
Hi, Andy. This is Di. I'm East Dallas Dave's wife.
Oh, wonderful.
I think you're coming to my home city, darling. I think you're coming to Dallas. I-20 is where you're going to be.
Sorry about that. My wife was asking me where some keys were. Okay, so you're Dave's wife. And
I'm Dave's wife. And I'm saying that the answer is you're coming to Dallas on...
Yeah. What highway would that be on?
That would be on Highway 20.
You're absolutely correct. We've been talking about that for a while now. We're like, well, we're going to start really at the homestead, but it looks like we're going to probably, just for kicks and grins, say we're starting in Atlanta. We're heading west on I-20 all the way to Dallas. That's going to be what we're going to call our first leg of the trip, stopping along the way, probably making stops in Alabama, and let's see, we go through Mississippi, Louisiana, get over to Texas, making stops along the way, seeing our fans and their setups, and maybe some feed and seeds, tractor supplies along the way. But, yep, that's going to be kind of our first leg from Atlanta to Dallas. So we were in Dallas, I think, in 2010. Had a wonderful time. I met your husband and your daughter.
You did, and I think you met me, too, when you were at North Haven Gardens.
Exactly right, and your daughter. We had a really fun time. That was a great time. We did the radio show live there from North Haven, and we had a fun time. So, yep, we're definitely looking at getting back to Dallas. I was looking at the map yesterday, actually, and seeing how far away Cameron, Texas was, down with Ideal Hatchery and Ideal Poultry, and it looks like it's a pretty good little drive south.
That'd be a pretty good little drive, yeah. Caleb might be getting a little restless if you try to do that one.
So, if we take 10 and take 10 down kind of along the Gulf Coast, it would put us into Houston, and then we can get over to Cameron, so Cameron, Texas. So we'll just have to see. It's still tentative, but that's probably going to be our first leg somewhere between Atlanta and Dallas and then heading up to Oklahoma City. And we're thinking about Denver, but there's no real easy way to get from Dallas to Denver. So we figured
there's not.
So we figured we'd shoot up straight to Oklahoma City and then shoot. There's a highway that goes almost diagonally from Oklahoma City straight to St. Louis, and then over to Louisville and Cincinnati and Ohio area, and then over to Virginia Beach, and then come down the coast. That's kind of the game plan. So you're
wow,
right.
Wow, that's going to be a great road trip. Take lots of pictures.
Well, lots of pictures, and we're also looking for, you know, we do have a video camera, and Jen's got a Mac Daddy phone she saved up and bought that does HD video, but we're going to see if we can either rent or borrow one of these fancy things, one of these HD movie cameras where we can get video along the way, and then every day or every other day we can post the video of that trip for the last 2 days on our YouTube channel. So people
That's great, Andy. Well, I'll tell you what, we love our chickens, and everybody loves our eggs.
Yeah.
We put them up for auction at my daughter's school, and they went for over $100.
Oh, my goodness. That's
I
awesome.
Know.
It's a fundraiser.
Craziness. I know. So she's making a little bit of pocket money and having a blast.
That is
so bad. You know, we're hoping that maybe we can get scholarship money in a few years for chickens.
Absolutely.
We'll see. Who knows?
From chickens and fresh eggs. You got to love it. And she's learning
all.
You
got to love it. Well, good to talk to you. Yeah. And we'll look forward to seeing you when you come to Dallas.
I'll make sure that our stops will be on the Facebook page, and it would be a pleasure to see y'all.
Perfect. All right. Give that little boy a big hug and tell Jen hello, too.
Definitely do that. And remember, to claim your prize, just send me over an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. That's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. And then that'll be, I need to just put eggcartons.com in the subject line. And then we need name, shipping address, phone number, and email. Name, shipping address, phone number, and email. So very good. Let's see. We've got over here to the chat room, and some people were saying that they if sound disappeared. So some people have sound, some people don't. So no sound. Then some people do have sound. Now they've got sound back. They had to refresh. So okay, very good. Alrighty. Nope, we are still here, but we are going to actually wrap it up. We've had a great show today. We welcome Jeanette Behringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Visit them online, if you would, www.albc-usa.org. A great organization. We encourage you to join. I join and pay out of my pocket to become a member, because I really believe in what they're doing and the great works that they do. Pat joined us for a little bit today, which was fabulous. She was called into the pharmacy, so she's out doing what she loves to do. And that was great. We had some great chickens in the news. We'll be posting on our Facebook page a little bit later. And then, of course, we had a wonderful winner, East Dallas Dave's wife out in Dallas, the Big D. And that's going to be our first segment of our trip this July, if everything pans out and goes smoothly from here on out. Atlanta to Dallas down I-20 is what we're looking at. Once we get all this finalized and in stone, we'll be asking for our listeners and Facebook fans to give us an email if they live along that route. I would say within 5 miles of the highway or so, maybe 10 miles. To let us know, and we can stop by and talk with you and interview you and get you and see your coops and meet you and have a grand old time. So we're looking forward to that as well. Tomorrow is Wednesday. It's the second Wednesday of the month. It is an open show, so we'll see if we can't possibly get a guest for tomorrow's show. I do have somebody in mind. And then this Thursday, we've got a great show with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. The topic's going to be 10 unique things to do with eggs. 10 unique things to do with your eggs. And that'll be this Thursday. And then a fun Friday this Friday where we have lots of prizes to give away. And we thank you for tuning in. So until tomorrow, we hope you have a great day. And on behalf of Pat and myself, power to the poultry. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.